This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
You're listening to Femi on FUBAR Radio.
If people think somehow there's another negotiation to be done, that's not the case. This is the deal. It's the result of what has been tough and difficult negotiations over a significant period of time. And as has been said, this is the deal that is on the table. This is the best possible deal. It's the only possible deal.
The Prime Minister insists that her government will be able to negotiate every aspect of the UK's future trade relationship with Europe within the space of 2 years. We've had 2.5 years since the referendum. So far, 20 of our own ministers have resigned. This is the most shambolic government in living memory.
One, we want a deal that protects jobs and the economy. That's our overall objective. If we can't get that, yes, a general election. If we can't get the general election, we've kept all the options on the table. That includes a people's vote.
Evidence from surveys and other UK authorities suggests that the country is not yet fully prepared for a cliff-edge Brexit.
Unfortunately, Mark Carney is a second-tier Canadian politician. Having failed in Canadian politics, he's got a job in the UK, which he isn't doing well.
UKIP is now tempted, or some people in UKIP are tempted, to let figures like Tommy Robinson into the party, and I think that would be a catastrophic mistake.
So I will take this deal back to the House of Commons, confident we have achieved the best deal available, and full of optimism about the future of our country. In Parliament and beyond it, I will make the case for this deal with all my heart, and I look forward to that campaign.
Welcome back to The Floor Is Yours. You're here with Femi, and I'm joined by Jolly on Rubs, Hayden Prowse, and later we'll be going to be discussing online propaganda, mental health, and all the fun issues relating to what's been happening in the news recently. So, for example, we have a withdrawal agreement that everybody hates regarding Brexit. We have the entire cabinet in chaos. There's a possibility that we might get a TV debate between Jeremy Corbyn and Theresa May on Brexit, which is kind of interesting.
Fun,
yeah, really
it's
fun.
No one will watch it because it's on at the same time as the I'm a Celebrity final.
Yeah.
So that just sort of shows you the nature of where we're at, really. Would you prefer to watch the I'm a Celebrity final, Harry Redknapp against someone else?
Yes.
Or watch Theresa May talk absolute fucking bollocks.
Theresa May talk bollocks.
That's Julian Rubenstein and Hazen Prowser. So quite simply, the thing is, they've actually agreed to be on the TV debates, but I think Theresa May agreed to be on the BBC and Jeremy Corbyn agreed to be on ITV. Is that right?
But what's the point of having a debate between two people who basically have the same position?
So hold on, not only are they talking at cross purposes, they're talking on different channels.
Yeah.
So it's perfect.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Literally perfect for the entire way this debate is.
Yeah, I think that's a way to avoid confrontation if they're on different airwaves.
Yeah.
I think that there is such a lack of debate within the higher echelons of our two governing parties, whilst there is the most simmering, vociferous debate that's ever taken place, you know, below, often, you know, started by yourself or Nigel Farage, you know, on the right. And when you hear John McDonald, for instance, talk about, you know, the possibility of a second vote, you've got to wonder, you know, the political capital that could be gained through, you know, just that simple transaction of allowing people their right to have a second referendum. Because, you know, what really pisses me off, right?
What?
Is that in Switzerland, where there are referendums all the time, there are referenda on referendum.
Hmm.
It's not unusual.
No. Referendum on referendum. I mean, that sounds exciting.
Quite
I wish I lived there.
I'm feeling aroused.
Do you prefer milk or dark chocolate?
To be fair, that's probably Femi's favourite place to live in the world. Yeah. There's a referendum constantly.
Constant sea
of referendum.
Over and over again.
Yeah, yeah.
It's true.
But hold on a second, Femi.
Yeah.
So do you think... All right, so given that John McDonald has said this, how does that change your or reaffirm your opinions on Labour? Will you be voting Labour now if you had the opportunity?
I don't know.
You're
I mean,
a big Corbyn fan.
I've always seen myself as Labour, but as in they've completely screwed up this entire whole Brexit debate.
Yeah.
So, but if they manage to pull it out of the bag at the last minute,
I guess
me red.
Yeah. Okay.
What, literally?
Sure.
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of what they like.
Redding up. Yeah. I've never experienced that.
I heard an interesting point on Newsnight the other night. You know, when they had this supposedly fake vicar on Newsnight, which, can I just say, is absolute bollocks. She's just a vicar that happened to be an extra in a couple of things.
BBC
Andrew
up
Adonis, fake news Adonis. Anyway, so there was a guy on that show that was making a point, and it hit me that I had been a bit too. You know, I was on the sort of second referendum bandwagon, and he was saying it feels so undermining for you guys to be saying that we didn't understand the implications of a Brexit. You know, all that the Remain side did was warn about the chaos that would happen if we had Brexit. Mm. So to now turn around and say we didn't realise the chaos that would happen if we had Brexit is kind of undermining the point that they're making in the first place. And people like him are saying we knew, we understood that, but we still want to go out. And for you guys to say second referendum kind of, you know,
well, I mean,
makes us feel like...
Okay, well, first of all, if you're just tuning in, I'm Femi, I'm from Our Future, Our Choice, Youth Movement for People's Sorry. Vote. And I'm here joined with John Rubenstein and Hayden Prowser. Now, they're two awesome guys who I've met before. I've been on... we need to talk about before on the podcast. And they actually have a new show, which is coming out tonight on Channel 4. The Ministry of Justice, which is at 11 p.m. And it's I'm pretty excited because you guys are going to be basically going underground in the crime world.
We're literally becoming the sort of vigilante justice that nobody needed.
Yes.
And you know, as Hayden said to me the other day, you know, at a time of sweeping police cuts where budgets are being slashed, it's so great that two middle-class white idiots have been sent to sort the problem out.
You didn't ask for this. You didn't need this. But it's happening anyway.
And you got it.
You're the heroes we actually need.
But who could possibly not want two middle-class white men heroes called Jolyon and Hayden? Who possibly in their wokest state, in this time of diversity and moving, you know, female perspectives up, couldn't want two loud, brash, privately educated white men just coming in and basically doing sod all?
Well, I mean, you are a minority after all. So,
well, there's not many Jolyons.
Exactly.
As members of the 1%, we are actually the smallest minority in the country.
Precisely. Yeah. You're an endangered species,
we
pretty
are.
Much.
Well, you say that, but actually one of the... So what we've done, Femi, is we've sort of decided that we are going to look at the state of the nation. But politics is too ridiculous to satirise anymore, so we decided to look at criminality.
Yeah.
And we've got three... hour-long films, basically, which is new for us because we used to do kind of half an hour sort of sketch shows. And what we do is we look at the nature of certain problems. So we look at, in this episode, drugs. And later on, drugs, a subject which I'm sure a lot of your listeners are very interested in. Although they're never inhaled.
Of course.
We look at the arms trade and, well, weapons, really. We look at good and bad weapons, and we're very confused because, you see, there are good weapons, like government-sanctioned and issued tanks, bombs, and fighter jets, which we sell to really great places.
Yeah, like Saudi Arabia and that lot.
Well, exactly. Mm. I mean, places literally on our own sort of...
Terrorist watch list.
Listen, as Boris Johnson said, you know, if we didn't do it, someone else would do it. So we make a huge amount of money. And we're very confused because, you know, there are obviously these good weapons and then there are bad weapons, like knives on the street that the youth are using.
So they're bad, right?
They're
the bad ones.
But these ones are good.
Which ones are good?
Well, this is the thing: is what is a good weapon or a bad weapon?
Clearly, knives in the hands of young black people in this country are bad.
Yes, right. Whereas
if it's weapons that we're selling that are blowing up schools and hospitals in Yemen, those are good.
Yes,
I think so. I don't think you're understanding, Femi, the simple tax revenue and the jobs that are created from literally decimating churches and schools and houses with our own bombs. But this is great.
Yeah. But there's money to be made there. I mean, we should probably start leaning into human trafficking as well, given that there's money to be made there as well.
What we do see, Femi, is we realise that what we really need to do, as I've said, is talk to the youths. So we make a children's book called Nicky the Naughty Knife, who dreams of growing up to be a government-sanctioned weapon or tank. And we go and we talk to some of... we're not at liberty to say which arms manufacturer, but a very, very big fucking arms manufacturer.
Yep.
And we try and get them to sign off on it, and then we go and speak to the government about it. Hayden, you had a lovely trip, didn't you, to an arms fair, Hayden?
Yeah, we went to the arms fair to research characters for the children's book. You know how Cars is the Pixar film about cars for kids? We just thought we could do that for bombs, tanks, and laser-guided missiles. You know, like a cute ballistic. Being like, oh, when I grow up, I want to be a flying over to Saudi Arabia and they're dropping the bombs on the Yemeni children. And obviously, that's something kids would engage with.
Yeah. Did you find any gay bombs? Or
yeah, we tried to cast some gay, some BAME, some gender non-binary bombs as well, because obviously we're a very progressive, forward-thinking children's book.
Exactly.
I didn't know as well that a lot of Tombstone missiles are actually quite bri-curious.
They are. Yeah. Specifically Tombstone. Mm. Where did you read about that?
I just watched you.
You had a fling with a Tombstone once.
I'm really more into back sort of Eurofighters. You know, those kind of sort of really super expensive sort of vertical. Super cool, those things.
Do you know what the weirdest thing at that arms fair was, right? There was a arms company, which I shall not name, which had these drones. Basically, drones was the big thing at this year's arms fair,
right?
They're
just hot.
They're just hot.
Yeah.
Drones are very like...
Drones are so hot right now.
There were drone tanks. There were tiny drones that could like go through fucking windows and shit like that, just like in Black Mirror. There were all these weird drones. And people were sort of sitting there with their champagne watching these sort of, you know, demonstrations of drone warfare. Mm. Like, not realising they're in a scene from Terminator.
You know,
it's the
really,
most bizarre...
Because the great thing about doing our show is we get to work with a lot of really exciting journalists and sort of our researchers, our assistant producers, who are really the stars of the show. They do so much work. And one of the things that they found that just blew my fucking mind is how many of these arms companies basically take like really popular YouTubers, often YouTubers who are really successful with kids, and they bring them into schools and they show them this cool possible profession that you can do.
What this seems healthy.
Arms trade. Yeah. I know. The amazing thing also about the Brexiteers, who are deeply involved in a lot of this, is that really, I'm sure, like you, most people who are not thick understand that a lot of these self-serving politicians want to burn regulation, burn red tape, and enable us, for instance, to, you know, with the arms trade, for instance, to sell to everyone. I mean, everyone who's currently banned, and there aren't many, to be fair, but just make sure we can sell them to them as well.
But it makes sense. The people who are saying that we should leave the EU with no deal, meaning that the only deals we currently have will be the arms trade deals that will be left over once we leave the EU, mean that we will lean more heavily into the industries that result in, you know, bombing schools and hospitals.
Well, totally. And the thing is
that
these guys are so clever.
Show on BBC right now called The Foreign Office. I don't know if you've seen it.
Oh, it's brilliant.
It's like the thick of it. It's absolutely hilarious. And there's this brilliant moment where this guy's in Mongolia, this sort of average businessman. He's decided to travel to Mongolia to profit off the sort of pollution there, which is some of the worst in the world.
Okay.
And he's created these little masks, and it's just, I mean, that's our kind of future, isn't it? It's like selling masks to the Mongolians because their pollution levels are so high.
Do you know what? I do think it's sort of a bizarre reality that's sort of painted there. I don't, you know, underestimate the amount of amazing work that goes on by these civil servants. Obviously, you know, depoliticized, wanting to do, you know, what they can for the government at the time. One of the things as well that's been really interesting about doing our show this time is, as I said, you know, there's one episode tonight which is on drugs. Then, you know, we look at the arms trade and good, bad weapons. And then we look at the 1% and white collar crime. Mm. And it is staggering, some of the people who we've come into contact with this time. I mean,
for example,
if you've seen, well, I'm just going to say that we have CEOs of some of the largest corporations in the world on camera talking to us at Davos, wanting to back our amazing initiative, which is called Standing Tall Against Regressive Corporate Hatred, or STARCH.
Yes.
Because what we realise is, as Hayden said earlier, you know, obviously hashtag Black Lives Matter, but, you know, for STARCH, hashtag White Collars Matter.
Yeah.
We try to make it a hate crime to outlaw words like banker wanker.
Fat cat. I mean, people say the word fat cat with impunity.
I know. It has to stop. It's tearing our society apart.
Making some people very sad.
So what we do is we create our own sort of fake news. We hire some actors and we sort of film some fake hate crimes. And then we go to Davos to recruit a spokesman for our organisation. In the trailer, you can see that we finally met. I don't know if you've heard of a guy called Tony Blair.
Oh, wait, I've heard of him.
He
likes war.
Yeah, he does, but also he likes money as well. And it's amazing because we get to meet him. But genuinely, it was insane because you were walking around. I mean, how would you even describe it? Walking around this Swiss ski resort with more armed security, with CEOs a hoot. I mean, all, literally all over the streets. I don't know. That makes no sense. CEOs does it? It's a hoot. It's a wash. That's what I was thinking.
CEOs ahoy.
And we really were talking to all of this. And I'm not going to say which country, but a president of one country. Mm. And we say, you know, have you heard about, you know, standing tall against regression? Oh, yes, I have. And I totally agree with it. And it's bloody good. Yeah. You spoke to some pretty major... I mean, we can't really say who they are because we want you to see it. But listen, I mean, if you've seen our stuff before, I think this takes it onto a whole different Davos level.
But you've also got a thing... I think tonight's episode, you have, what is it, a designated mugging area?
Mm. Yeah.
That sounds
makes
pretty,
sense.
That sounds like you've just basically found a really, really complicated way to create your own fight club.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to get mugged, you may as well do it in a safe environment.
Yeah, although you've kind of broken some of the rules by putting it on TV, but I think that should be quite fun anyway.
Well, can I just say, just give a big, big shout out to my man Ali Official. We've got some incredible new talent in this show. Mm. He's massive online. Like, he's got a huge Instagram following. He's a very, very funny man. As well as who's some of the other people? We've got an amazing girl, you know, Julia and Belle.
KG, the comedian, who we've been working with for years. He's brilliant.
Jesse Lupants, who's just an absolute ledge. Jack.
Oh, Jack.
Oh, my God.
Jack Carroll is brilliant. He does a hilarious sketch on disabled parking.
Yeah, and we're so lucky because we really, you know, we realise that we're sort of standing on the shoulders of giants, really, in that slot at 11 p.m. I mean, that's where, you know, when me and Hayden were in school, we used to watch all that stuff, you know, the 11 o'clock show, The Word, you know. That. I mean, you were probably about 4 years old when The Word came out, weren't you, Femi? Do you even know what The Word was? You don't, do you? Never heard of it.
I'm 28. I'm not that much younger than you.
Oh, my God, you are. You're so much younger than us.
Yeah, you're 3 years younger than us.
According to Wikipedia, he's only 2 years younger than us. Mm-hmm. I'm 29. Okay, FYI. But no, we've got some amazing new talent on the show, and hopefully in these drudge times of Brexit and shit, it can give you a bit of a bloody laugh.
But yeah, we're going to be switching topic, actually. Today we're going to be talking about mental health and online propaganda. So if anybody wants to take part in the conversation, the floor is yours. So call us on 033-0223-0200. And you can tweet at FUBAR Radio. So let us know what you think. Now, what do you guys think needs to change regarding online propaganda?
I think. Do you want to start this one with Cambridge Analytica vibes?
Propaganda or news? Because it's the same thing now, isn't it?
Well, yeah. It's fake news. So,
literally everything is. This really triggers me, you know, Femi. Can I tell you why? I'm going to try and not get triggered mid conversation. But two articles recently. One about a university supposedly banning clapping. Okay, and the Daily Mail losing
this.
Its mind over it, and then another article about Iceland being banned from putting on an advert to save the orangutans on international television. Right, you read both of those articles, and you immediately like, oh my God, this is so stupid. Then you do a little bit more reading, and you realise that the university has only banned clapping because severely aspergic people who are students at the university find it very difficult to deal with, and they can have absolute episodes over it, and it's really intense for them. Totally rational thing to do. Then you read about the supposed banning by Clearcast, which isn't the organisation that banned the advert. That's the Advertising Standard Agency. And the reason they ban political ads is because as soon as you unbottle that genie, then what do you think you're going to have? Loads of adverts for orangutans on the TV? Or lots of adverts by banks and the Koch brothers telling you that Brexit is a fantastic idea and we should all burn more fossil fuels? That is what happens. But people get so triggered by things they don't fully understand and go on these huge tirades. You know, I'm just going to finish this rant by saying that in the Spanish Civil War, 10,000 Brits went out to fight against, you know, authoritarian rule of General Franco. Okay, it was forces of democracy versus the forces of evil. Nowadays, people go onto Twitter armed with hashtags and killer memes, and they bravely tweet at people that they slightly disagree with and try to ruin their lives and bring them down. And it's just so pathetic, and it really annoys me.
I'm going to take this back a little bit, right? So we're living in an age of journalism. And an age of clickbait, where newspaper editors say to journalists, I'm sorry, we're not going to be able to employ you enough more unless you're getting more click-throughs and your articles are being shared more. So what you now have, which you've always had, it's been 150 years of commercial journalism, but what you have now is an imperative on rational, sane journalists to create the most outrageous headline possible in order to further their own career. There's an amazing podcast I'd recommend to anyone called The Business of Internet Outrage, which is on one of my favorite podcasts, The Daily, which is the New York Times podcast. And they speak to a couple in Pennsylvania, and all they did was repackage stories that already existed. So it was like, literally, if it was a story about Hillary Clinton, it's suddenly like, Hillary, Hillary Muslim shame, click through. And all they literally were doing, he was looking at CNN, he was looking at New York Times, he was copy and pasting it, and then he was repackaging it. And he was making a huge amount of money. And he made a really good point, which is like, we say we don't want outrage, but as Hayden's rant about ranting just showed, we quite like it. Yeah. We like it in our dramas. We like it in our sort of daily sort of chat with each other. The idea that news was ever dispassionate is wrong. But now what we have is a reality where it's actively fucking encouraged. It's needed for the to make the dollar bills.
Well, I mean, you've got, especially with Twitter, I mean, it runs on headlines. It doesn't run on people having read the article that the headline's associated with. It runs on, can I post a really, really out there headline with whatever caption I want to put on it, so I can get as many retweets as possible, which means that it doesn't really matter what's behind the story, because it's just about making sure that you can get the clicks. And so journalists want clicks, tweeters want clicks, and it's just a repetitive cycle that creates really, really outrageous news.
Yeah. And I think people have a real misconception as to how effective their tweets are. I like to imagine, when the whole Bring Back Our Girls thing happened, in Nigeria, people were doing hashtag Bring Back Our Girls. I was just imagining a scene in northern Nigeria where Boko Haram got the jihadi troops together and was like, guys, Lena Dunham's just tweeted, jihad's off for the week. People think the only people you're speaking to are your immediate circle, people that already agree with you. I make it a point to tweet, to basically critique the left on my when I tweet, which is rarely, as much as possible, because I know they're the only people listening.
Yeah.
And I don't want to just reinforce their,
But I kind of have that problem as well, because, I mean, half of what I do is tweeting at Remainers to keep them from saying outrageous stuff, like basically calling all Brexiters racist or saying they're all stupid.
Are not all Brexiters racist?
Yeah, apparently not. You actually go and speak to people around the country who voted to leave, they turn out to be actual normal human beings.
So people who voted to leave aren't just idiots. Online.
Because you're totally right. I mean, I think you're good to do that, because that really undermines the Remain movement, doesn't it, when people start saying stuff like that? It really.
But the thing is, what you've done, in a way, Fem, is like, you've sort of Nigel Farage is you've kind of like hacked, like Boris Johnson, Donald Trump, Nigel Farage are a certain breed of politician that understood that you didn't need a press conference anymore. You could just say something outrageous on Twitter, steal the news cycle, and basically become the story. And because you're already writing, oh my god, Donald Trump's just written this outrageous thing, well then you've just that's now part of the conversation. It is the conversation. And what you've done is very cleverly is you've utilized those tactics for the left. Now I think we both feel, actually I don't want to speak, I'm genuinely interested in what you think. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. Like, it's never gonna go back. So really, I feel like rationality is dead. You've got to accept that, and you've got to make really emotive arguments. If Brexit, happens, there'll be no more Watsits.
That is the main issue with Brexit.
Everyone knows that.
Well, I mean,
everyone knows it's the main issue. I think it's ridiculous that no one's talked about it more. No Watsits.
I think you need to get really radical about being really sort of moderate and fact based. We need to have the movement for moderate, tolerant, very relaxed jihad. NISIS.
Yes.
If you will. And we need to, get really extreme about having our facts correct. If you are actually a radical, you're obviously still welcome to join NISIS, because we're very tolerant.
I'd quite like to join NISIS. It's
nice.
Yeah.
The thing is, being real for a second, if we are talking about, that genuinely, how do you deal with fake news and internet outrage and everything like that, you basically have to end capitalism, because it's making so many people so much money. It's driven by the profit motive. If individual news organizations weren't basically just in this attention economy trying to grab as much as you can, the BBC do it all the time. you know, you won't believe what happens after this. You won't believe what happens next.
So Femi, but you know? Just Femi does exactly the opposite of this. You go out with your microphone, you speak to people about the facts, and you make them look stupid when they don't know the facts.
Well, I mean,
and that's still important, right?
My aim isn't always to make them look stupid.
Yes, it is.
Occasionally, if they are particularly abrasive, I do have a bit of fun at their expense. But the main issue is basically pointing out, asking them questions until the narrative that they've been fed by your Boris Johnsons, your Nigel Farage, simply falls apart in their hands.
And they realise that there will be no WhatsApps after Brexit.
That's the main thing. And WhatsApps are essential because we need somebody to keep Donald Trump his colour. And the thing is...
Hey!
And quite simply, the issue is actually getting the facts out there. So it is to an extent the emotional argument, but it's also countering complete emotion with facts. And the reason why it's been so bubbly is because people stay in their own little echo chambers. And one of the reasons why I started Twitter
You started Twitter? That's amazing. I didn't know that.
I'm an innovator, let's just say. I got on Twitter start of 2016, and I was on Facebook before, and there was just no point talking about Brexit there because after a certain while, after my fifth post or so, I realized everyone agrees with me.
Yeah.
There is no point in this. I'm just talking to myself. And that's the reason why nobody expected the Brexit vote, because everybody thought everyone I know wants to remain, so clearly the entire country wants to remain.
Mm.
To be fair, Haid did think it was going to happen, didn't you?
Did I? I don't know.
I thought you... I mean, I think we both
thought...
But
you followed by Brexiteers.
Trump.
You followed by Brexiteers. Do you get in a lot of arguments with Brexiteers on Twitter? Do you feel like it works?
Does it convince me?
Do you manage to convince them in 280 characters?
Occasionally. It doesn't happen all the time, but I do get occasional people that come to me and say, I was like this, or now I think this should be people's vote, or at the very least, I'm not getting the Brexit I voted for. Whether or not they become ultra-Europhiles afterwards is, not really what's happening, but...
Do you know the thing that scares me genuinely about what's going on at the minute is how normalised things are? I don't know if you've been following this story about Jamal and, the issue that, there's this... he was bullied, and I put something out basically being like... as a bullied kid myself, obviously that kid will be punished. I thought that was patently obvious. But talking about the Express, the Mail, the Sun, Farage, Hopkins, and the like,
and Tommy Robinson as well.
And I was so shocked how many people were like, "Yeah, but what about the grooming gangs in Rotherham?" And I was like, "Look, man, if you are going to basically just be a fucking open racist, right? Just be an open racist. I have no problem with grooming gangs, no matter what race or creed they are, being prosecuted by police." And they were terrified of prosecuting them because they didn't want to be seen to be racist. Yeah. But like Tommy Robinson, for instance, like now, who's claiming all sorts of things about Jamal himself, his sister and everything like
which
that.
Which have been disproven.
Sure, but it's the normalisation of the noise, right? I mean, like Donald Trump is the classic example of someone who is just so... It's so normal now, his antics, that I sort of wonder if he's just totally Teflon. I mean, what do you guys think? Do you think the Mueller investigation is going to actually do anything to him?
Basically, what Donald Trump has done, he's got the bed of nails protection. If you lie on one sharp nail, it will stab you. Whereas if you lie on a bed of nails, nothing will hurt you because it's all spread out. If Donald Trump only did one outrageous thing in his entire presidency, that one outrageous thing would probably take him down. But the fact that he consistently does outrageous things means he's protected because nobody expects anything of him. But here we are. We are about to bring in our guests, Gavin Haynes and Natasha Devon. So tune in.
FUBAR Radio presents Ian
Boltworth. We have author Anthony Horowitz is in the studio.
There was a series of books by Caroline Graham. They were called Agatha Christie on Acid. They were terrific thrillers.
Okay.
And somebody came to me and said, will you do a TV series based on these books? We're going to call it Barnaby. And Barnaby, of course, is the name of the detective in there. And I said, I read the book, and I saw a couple of the books. I said, look, the hero here is not the detective. It's the place. That's what this is all about. Call it Midsummer Murders. So I did actually put those two words together. And then when it came to writing the original first seven double episodes, because they were 2 hours long, I sort of crafted the show as well.
Okay.
I do get a sort of accreted by in small letters.
Every Monday.
Ian Boltworth.
From 2 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
Now, at this point, some folk might be uncomfortable, will be uncomfortable with the graphic language that I'm about to use, but I'm not going to dilute the reality for such an important issue. Now, I'm used to the abuse online in particular. I'm regularly called a wee boy. I'm told that I wear my dad's suits and stuff. You know, me and my pals actually laugh about it. That's how I cope about it. We find the best insults and that's how we have a laugh. but I struggle to see any joke in being systematically called a dyke, a rug muncher, a slut, a whore, a scruffy bint. I've been told that you can't put lipstick on a pig, let the dirty bitch eat shit and die. I could soften some of this by talking about the C word, but the reality is there is no softening when you're targeted with these words and I'm left reading them on my screen every day, day in, day out. She needs a kick in the cunt, guttural cunt, ugly cunt, wee animal cunt. There is no softening just how sexualised and misogynistic the abuse is. I've got a comment from some guy, William Hanna, never heard of in my life. I've pumped some ugly birds in my time, but I just wouldn't. I've been assured multiple times that I don't have to worry because I am so ugly that no one would want to rape me.
That was Mary Black, one of the first time, well, the first time that anybody, that was Mary Black, one of the first times that anybody in Parliament has ever used the word, the C word. And that's because of the online abuse that she's received. It's frankly disgraceful in my opinion, but here to discuss the effects that these sorts of things have on people, especially regarding online propaganda, especially regarding mental health, we have Gavin Haynes from Vice News, and we have Natasha Devon, who's a mental health campaigner. Welcome to the studio.
Hello.
Hi, thank you.
So what do you think needs to change regarding online abuse? Because what you just heard there was just directed at a politician, which the people that send it might have opposing views. Do you think that gives them the right to say whatever they like to people?
Well, I think what's really interesting, when you look at kind of gendered psychology, most women, not all, but most women have a pretty straightforward body image shame trigger. Mm. And on some kind of unconscious level, we know that. So what tends to happen is if a woman sticks her head above the parapet or says something controversial, she is tried to shame into silence by drawing attention to her sexuality, to her shagability, to her attractiveness. Yeah. So that's why, you know, I talk about mental health and education, neither of which has anything to do with what I look like. And every time I go on telly and say something controversial, I have queues of men on social media lining up to tell me that they don't want to have sex with me. And it's always confusing because it was never on offer. but now I understand the psychology behind it. It makes sense to me why that's happening.
Oh yeah, I mean, I one of the people I follow on Instagram recently pointed out that for men, especially online, having different characteristics, being both intelligent and attractive, those are both pluses. Whereas with a woman, if she's both intelligent, being attractive also acts as a negative. I mean, a plus becomes a negative. She can be attractive, or she can be, intelligent, and they actually cancel each other out in the public discourse, and it gets used against them, and it's ridiculous.
The Madonna whore paradigm, I think, is still very much alive and well in our culture. And if you want proof of that, look no further than the Me Too movement, when you've got sort of classically attractive Hollywood actresses not being believed because they're sexy, and we can't wrap our heads around the idea of a woman being sexy and morally good at the same time.
Yeah. President, what's his name?
Trump.
Trump is an absolute heartthrob. I see him and get titillated every time. That orangey leather skin just... why did I just say that? I was actually thinking about the Canadian Prime Minister, because he's allowed to be both hot and a great leader, whereas for a woman it's somehow seen as, we can't compute that she's both intelligent and attractive. Gavin Haynes, you operate on Vice News. In the comment section of Vice News, do you tend to get a lot of pretty abusive stuff?
Well, there isn't a comment section. They deleted it about sort of 3 or 4 years ago in a great redesign. I guess it's getting just too much negativity. And I think, you know, a lot of media organisations have found that they couldn't really sort of monitor this thing into a form that felt like it was adding anything. So there was a great sort of purge 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh, wow. So that means that you saw that there was a problem in terms of the harmful nature of the rhetoric being used on your platform, and Vice News then decided that in order to basically protect the people involved in it, they would actually, remove that platform.
Well, I don't know about harmful. It was more just that, you know, people were criticising the brand. It was just a terrible place to kind of, you know, we've written all this stuff for you and here are people saying it's shit, it's awful.
Well, I mean, okay, that was my little plug segue into the notion that, say, that like you've got Facebook, who allows horrendous stuff to be put on their platform with, very little monitoring, and then you have elections getting swayed. And, I mean, one of the things that I found quite interesting about the Trump campaign was that
at the time of the Hillary Clinton Trump campaign, the bots that were created weren't just on the Trump side, they were also on the left side. Because if you have bots that are claiming to be Black Lives Matter, and they're saying, kill all the police, burn them like bacon, then you create a very toxic environment. You portray one side as being something that it's not, and you set this up. You set up this dichotomy whereby both sides think the other side is really, really horrendous, even worse than they actually are, and it just further polarizes the thing and splits the country.
I think there's a really sort of interesting parallel between, you know, what you're talking about, the political rhetoric and the sort of, you know, what was being said earlier by Natasha about, you know, the whore and Madonna thing. You know, there is this kind of bizarre polarization generally in everything now. You know, Charlie Brooker, I think, put it best when he said the internet used to be like meh. And now it's just outrage.
Yeah.
But why do people go on Twitter? I always find this... Mary Black I love, but I find this very confusing. People are like, I went on the hate haiku website the other day, Twitter, and people were hateful towards me. What the fuck do you expect? Like, Carol Cordwallo, who I really respect as a journalist, wrote a whole article the other day about how... James O'Neill, what's his name?
Andrew O'Neill.
Had called her a cat lady. And like, okay, it's a bit mean, but come on, what, like, a whole article about how someone was a bit mean because she called you a cat lady, like, this isn't important stuff.
I think what is important though is what Natasha was saying earlier, which is just like, if you're a woman and you go on telly, you're basically just told basically if someone wants to fuck you or not. And it is like, it's so basic, it's just fucked up. Like, it's just like, it's, and it is the nature of you know, misogyny, the core nature of misogyny, the fear of a woman, the fear of that female, you know, perspective emanating through sort of the corridors of, you know, all of our lives, which is so healthy. I'm fascinated to know, like, what have you found, like, in your research about it? Like, where does it come from, that psychology you're talking about?
Well, what's really interesting is the more information you have, the more you want to apply a simple narrative to it, because it's a comfort thing. So I think when social media was first invented, we thought this would be a fabulous tool because it would give everyone a voice and we would understand multiple perspectives. But what it actually did was it overwhelmed us. And that's why everything's become so polarized, because people want simplicity, ultimately. You know, the world is a very terrifying place. If you consider everything, it becomes too overwhelming. So that's why I think we pick a person and we stick with them regardless. There's no room for nuance. You know, like, for example, for me, I'm a big fan of some things that Jeremy Corbyn says, but I find that, you know, the people who are these kind of hardcore Corbynistas are not that different from the Trump supporters or the UKIP supporters, the kind of dogged one-dimensional thinking, but it's because they need to believe that he is their savior. And anything outside of that is just going to confuse them too much.
And I think one of the things that you have to do is you have to call out your own side as much as you call out the other side, because otherwise you are just being dogmatic and it becomes cultish. And I mean, one of the things that I often said regarding the Trump era, that the left specifically has got to call out what is okay as much as it calls out what isn't okay, because otherwise we will not survive the Trump era. Every time we allow somebody to say that this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, even though it's actually not that bad, we allow the other side to basically say, well, you guys are all snowflakes who get annoyed at pretty much everything. I mean, I remember I went on Gay Pride a couple of years ago, and I was literally wearing a rainbow t-shirt, and I ended up in a gay magazine. And I made a Facebook post that said, because I was in the gay magazine, I said, all right, I guess I'll be single for a while. And I had a friend that said I was normalizing homophobia with that post. I was literally at Gay Pride.
Right.
And I think the left has to recognize that making a joke about an issue does not equate to actually making, like,
finding enemies, not converts, which the right is really good at finding converts, right? And the left just wants to like, half of these discussions that people are having online, like, sorry, like, a massive support of the trans movement, but I get so confused by the divisions within that debate about who's a TERF, who's this, who's that. It's harder to understand than, like, the Sunni Shiite thing. So what the fuck is the difference between all these people genuinely seem to agree on 99% of things? We should all have, you know, civil rights guaranteed. We should all be able to marry and love who we want. But, like, we're like obsessing over minor differences when we should be focusing on the fact that the world's going to burn in 12 years' time.
But if you're confused by what a TERF is, it's essentially the feminist equivalent of UKIP.
Right.
It's mainly sort of, it's like middle-class white women who are, most of them are gay, but they're like, we're okay, we've got our rights, we're pulling up the drawbridge, the rest of you can all fuck off. That's yeah, the definition.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, I think that, I just think there's much more common ground than you would, than people would have you believe if you were just to read the arguments on Twitter. There's so much more that they could agree on.
I think,
you know,
what Hayden's saying,
we need a summer
important
of love again. What happened to that? It's like the summer of hate the last two.
But also what Hayden just said there about, like, we're all sort of we need to sort of unite, we need to coalesce, because ultimately the biggest threat that we face is the biggest problem in the world that no one wants to face, with the climate change reality. And
I thought you were going to say what's it's, okay.
No, I'm done with the what's it's joke. It's done. But I genuinely think that what you said about, you know, us needing to simplify things is like really profound, because if you think about how huge the issues are that we're facing, it's absolutely terrifying. So actually it's a lot easier to kind of get sort of, I guess, worked out about no one respecting your isms, you know, and then it is to say, how do we deal with some of this?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I guess I'm missing from these debates is a recognition of the fact that the reason why we're so passionate about whether or not it's Trump or Hillary, or whether or not it's Brexit or Remain, is because we all care deeply about the future of our country. If we start from that position, we then know that we all have the same aim, and it stops becoming this person is trying to destroy my country. No, it's this person is trying to protect the country. We simply disagree on how to do it.
I think that's
the main problem. And
I think it's generally people who are, it's so funny, we all agree that we live in this post-truth era, but we're all more doubly extra convinced about all of our opinions all the time. It's this weird paradox. And actually, it's not really people's opinions that are the problem. It's more that. It's more how to get there.
Yeah.
And people seem to have... The best thing that could possibly happen is if nobody did anything. It's people trying to do things that's causing the fucking problem. Do you know what I mean?
Bloody human existence getting in the way of progress.
Government should just get into power and then do nothing. Everything would be fine.
There was a super famous day, I think it was in the 1930s, where the BBC News just literally went, and today, nothing has happened.
That would be so wonderful, wouldn't it? Please bring that day back.
It's like the Belgians didn't have a government for 18 months,
and
GDP went up. I think that's generally like when these things turn out, you just leave things to the market.
I don't know whether anyone in this room knows, but I was very briefly the government's mental health czar. I lasted 9 months. That's how long it takes to grow a baby and become completely disillusioned with the political system in this country. But what I discovered, because after I was fired for criticising education policy, which was outside my remit, apparently, and I did a freedom of information request, and genuinely I could give that to you as a script and say I've written this as satire and you would believe me. And what struck me was just the incompetence. So one of the emails read, obviously we don't want to get rid of her when it looks like we're doing it because she criticizes, but equally it cannot be conceivable that she continues when she criticizes. And I'm like, that's the thick of it right there. And I'm like, that terrified me, because I'm like, be evil, fine, but evil and incompetent, that's a toxic mix.
Yeah.
We talk quite a lot about this, which is like whether actually people want to see that as comedy anymore, because, you know, when we started doing our shows, I guess it was sort of 2012, you know, Clegg and Cameron, Ed Miliband, those lovely old days where things were quite bland.
Yeah.
You know, and that was kind of fun. It was kind of fun taking the piss out of what's going on. But it feels now like it's very hard to like find Charlottesville in any way funny. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's very hard to kind of... Because the other thing I'm really interested in is, because you're so pro-European.
You're not
utterly pro-European.
See
the thing about one in four Europeans being a populist now? And I saw there's this wonderful sort of piece by, you know...
it's more than that, isn't it? It's like, I think in 1990... 80% of the population were voting for mainstream parties, and now it's 43% of the country, most countries, definitely this is Germany, I think, voting for either far right or far left parties, and something like 40% voting for mainstream parties.
Maybe that's because of what we were saying, though, that they just, it's just as simple as offering easy answers. Like, there'll be no more what-sits.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't vote for Brexit.
Yeah, we have to work out how to make your stuff super sexy.
Yeah.
Like,
Let's brainstorm.
Are you saying I'm not sexy?
No, I just realised as I said that, it came out.
Hayden Proust tells him he's not sexy.
Facts are not sexy.
I really miss Nick Clegg.
Yeah.
He'll be on Facebook soon.
Yeah. Come from MySpace to Facebook now.
Oh, MySpace.
But I mean, we have to do something about the way we talk to each other, because as I said, if you treat someone like the actual enemy, if you treat them like they're trying to destroy the country, you get just the most horrendous abuse online. Mm. I mean, for me, abuse is about once every minute. Racial abuse is every day, 2 days. Mm. Threats of violence is every 2-3 months. Mm. And then in February, somebody posted my home address online.
Wow.
Yeah. And given what happened with Joe Cox, given the high profile of the campaign, given that I'm black, not exactly a great combination if my home address is online, especially given...
Perfect, no.
Not exactly. Mm. And how do you deal with that? I mean, do we now accept it as the norm that if somebody gets into politics that they should be expected to put up with this sort of...
What is your comeback when someone posts your address online? Is there any legal recourse to that?
I was on hold with the Met Police for 40 minutes until I thought, all right, this isn't going to work.
Mm. It is illegal. You're not allowed to do that, are you?
There you go.
Yeah. I've had a troll for years, and I found the most shocking thing about it is the lack of ability of any organisation to really take control of that stuff. It's slightly terrifying, really.
I mean, I reported it to Twitter, but I mean, what was I going to do? Share the screenshot of somebody posting my home address?
Should have really called Nick Clegg personally, give him a call, just said, listen, mate, I really loved your work in the coalition.
I think you are making an important point, and like Joel and I both have been in the business of of making MPs look stupid and business leaders look stupid for the past sort of 6-7 years, but I feel more and more uncomfortable with that and doing that, because I don't feel like it's really adding to the debate. Like, that's what everybody is doing right now. Everybody wants someone else to blame. I just think the smartest thing for us as satirists, the smartest thing or the most constructive thing that I could do now would be to create some kind of movement or create some kind of show that brought people together and made people find the common ground. I think that's something that there's a real...
One of the things that I keep saying is that imagine if all the energy we're putting into Brexit right now is focused on the causes of Brexit, like the NHS, housing, education. Or imagine if instead of a massive Brexit project, we were focusing exclusively on the NHS, something that everybody agrees needs to get better. And if we would focus all the energy we've done over the past 2 years on how to make the NHS better, I mean, we'd all be on the same side.
But isn't the truth really that fundamentally you've got forces of free market capital that want to deregulate this country, make it the biggest tax haven that's ever existed, slash the ability for corporations to really have any mandatory rights for workers, and then also basically have a bonfire of what we have left of our public services? You know, the NHS, I think, behind the Chinese government, is the biggest single employer in the world. Mm. And I found a fascinating fact out about the NHS, and I think that people don't talk about stuff like this enough. So if you own America and you have the best possible insurance, a lot of the cancer drugs, the best cancer drugs, actually aren't available to you. Whereas the NHS is incredible, because when they negotiate with a big pharmaceutical company, they say, look, we're going to be block buying this many drugs in a way that no other healthcare provider does. Mm. So we actually get an awful lot of treatments. There's our friend Jess Mills, who's Tessa Jowell's daughter, has done a huge amount about trying to make oncology and the treatment of cancer in this country one of our best sort of exports, which is fantastic. And it is still a bit of a postcode lottery. But speaking in general terms, you know, that is an incredible facility that the NHS sort of provides us by being able to negotiate with these pharmaceutical companies. But like you say, these are not the things we talk about.
I think that relates to what we were talking about earlier about the binary thing, because with all kind of public sector workers, so firefighters, police officers, teachers, NHS workers, they're presented either as heroes or villains. So we're either giving them a Pride of Britain award, or we're telling them that they're lazy, in the tabloid press. And I think if we took more of a neutral view of going, yes, these industries disproportionately attract people who aren't in it for the money, they're good people who want to make a difference, but ultimately they're still human and occasionally they fuck up, then we would have much more of an appreciation of institutions like the NHS.
Do you know what? There's no one in France almost on Twitter. You know that. And I was thinking about this the other day, because in France, they would not put up with this shit. Did you see the fucking riots the other day? Did you see that? Someone took a digger and poured manure over over the gate of the Lycée, and all these French people are like, wah, wah, wah! Like thousands of angry French people, and like they would not stand for the shit that's going on in this country.
It's so true. Like I was, well,
and it's because none of them are on Twitter. Yeah. They were like picking up cobblestones.
Yeah, but France would riot if it rained.
But I love that. You know, I was in Cannes at this this kind of fucking like it's like an advertising kind of awards.
The Cannes Film Awards.
No, not the Cannes Film Awards. It was called the Cannes Lions. But anyway, there was a taxi strike, and you know, when Uber kind of like had their strike here, the black taxi drivers. What we did over here was we're in a circle, black cabs drove around Trafalgar Square advertising Uber. When the French did it, they burned fucking tires in every motorway exit, so you couldn't get off the motorway. Burning tires,
like, around.
They don't care. Do you think that's because they have they actually had a revolution?
Yeah.
They had a revolution quite recently in 68, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, do you think that's why, though?
Well, they're definitely more revolutionary than us. We didn't have a revolution. We had reform, like, you know, 50 years later. We've always been the sort of slightly staid, slightly more rational sort of, you know...
Slightly less sexy.
Slightly less sexy country. But now we seem to be the revolutionaries with Brexit.
Well, yeah, but
now we seem to be the ones that are...
One of my favourite things with France was that the police went on strike about... I think it was about 5 years ago because they were being banned from drinking on the job.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God, that's incredible. Fuck it.
It is an outrage.
Oh, God.
Does anybody else have kind of... I was going to say revolution fatigue, but that's not really what I mean. But, you know, like the Women's March, for example. Yeah. What did that achieve in the long term? And I just think if that many people mobilising and taking to the streets is not enough to make the people in power sit up.
But I think, in the immediate aftermath, it didn't do a lot. But I think with, well, not necessarily the blue wave, but given the recent midterms in America... And you saw a record number of women and people of ethnic minorities getting into the Senate and the House. I think it did do a bit. At least
Femme, let's be real, man. Let's not get it twisted. It wasn't a blue wave, right? The Senate was retained, and every state that Donald Trump campaigned in, he won. Right, okay. He went every single state, and the legislative reality is that the Senate will make more and more conservative decisions for the judiciary, pushing back, you know, abortion rights. One of the scariest we were filming in America a couple of years ago, and I went to one of the things called the Holocaust of the Unborn, where basically a load of Hispanic women were brought up on a stage outside an abortion clinic that had already been closed. And I think
it was a terrible lolathon.
It was a bloody lolathon. It was the most depressing thing I've ever seen. There were something like, I think, 46 abortion clinics in Texas in 2000. Now there's like six. You know, and it's like, it is important to sort of like, just like we've been saying about, you know, our bubbles and stuff like that, for us to really look at this. Because I think what you were saying about the Women's March, it highlights the key thing. If people Instagram something or go to one march, that does not bring legislative change. And legislative change is fucking boring, turgid, difficult, and long-winded process, which you can't do in 140 characters, can you, Hayden?
No, but 280 you can.
Okay, good.
But I mean, social media has very much changed the way we speak to each other. But I mean, especially with the Brexit vote, you saw there was that age divide. Do you reckon that there's a difference between the way in which older people interact with social media and the way young people interact with it? Do we see different things? Are we as influenced by...
I mean, my mum uses an interesting string of emojis sometimes. I don't really understand what they mean.
Yeah, my mum doesn't understand what emojis mean either.
But I think it's really reductive to present it as younger people are more liberal and vice versa, because in fact, you know, the bulk of my work is in schools. That's what I go into, about three or four schools a week all over the UK. And there was and continues to be a swathe of predominantly young men who I would say have been radicalised into the alt-right through YouTube. And it's normally something like, you know, their parents are big fans of the Daily Mail, so that's the algorithm that's on on their PC, and so they end up reading Breitbart. And you know, when Milo Yiannopoulos was stomping around the internet everywhere, there were young men that I met who were so enamoured of him.
What were they like? What's their vibe? I'm so fascinated.
They were very I would describe them as twitchy and angry. I would walk in and they would say to me, "Are you a feminist?" Like that. Really? I've come to talk to you about mental health, but yeah, we can talk about feminism if you want. And then, you know, if I'd say, "Is there any questions at the end of the talk?" It would be, I saw online that you met Milo. What's he like? What's he like? Mm. And I said, well, I think he's a narcissist with mummy issues. Like, anything else you want to know? Then they were very kind of, you know, do you not agree? Even though, you know, I'm trying to talk to them about the universal things that are not politicized, like how to deal with stress. And then they'd be like, do you not agree that, you know, in real terms, there's no such thing as a pay gap?
Wow.
And I'm like, I don't know how you deal with that.
Do you know, really? Have you read a lot about this stuff about YouTube, the great radicalizer, because of the algorithm, which is forcing people further and further down these rabbit holes? I think it's fascinating that you've got an algorithm that is radicalizing people. There was a guy, I went to a talk of a guy who was an ex-Google employee that said that when, you know, DeepMind, which is the company that was bought by Google, and then created the computer that beat the first human at Go, which is the most complex game on Earth. And so this computer obviously just kicks human ass all day, every day, right? The first job it was given after it beat the first human at Go was making YouTube videos more addictive. Mm. You cannot beat this thing. You're going to lose. And it's sending people down these weird sort of Manu Yiannopoulos, Breitbart.
Yeah.
Do you know what, though? I read something literally yesterday that gives me faith in humanity, which is, even though these robots are coming and the algorithms are coming for us, there is literally not the most advanced robot in the world can't pick a strawberry. It can't do it. People, it literally can't do it.
When the robots take over, it's going to be the self-checkout machines. Everyone thinks it's going to be like Terminators, but it's going to be like unidentified item in your bargaining area, and then it's, give me your shoes, your boots, your motorcycle.
Are you telling us that the unexpected item in the bagging area is going to herald the end of humanity? Yeah. It won't be climate change, it won't be
obesity.
It will
be the rise of the self-checkout machines that are going to just exterminate us.
Gavin, as somebody who actually works for an online platform, what do you think needs to be done to combat the narratives that are just so devoid of facts? So one of the problems regarding fake news is that it isn't necessarily about lies being told. It's about the balance of information that might show more of one thing, that might show that it's this particular group of people that are responsible for this problem. How do you combat that to make sure that you get that even-handed message?
I don't know if there is a solution in the modern era. I mean, I think we're all just balkanizing endlessly. And, you know, YouTube is almost like a kind of that sort of radicalized version. It is a flip side to what some would see as like a progressive narrative that has kind of gone out of control, that has moved past its remit. And, you know, increasingly all sorts of media organizations, from Vice to The Independent, whatever, to, you know, Breitbart, are just sort of siloing down. And we're seeing a sort of balkanization of social media now with the rise of things like Gab, etc. There was a sort of a left-wing version recently. I can't quite remember what that was called. But, you know, where we're going to be in 5 or 10 years' time, I just don't know.
So it seems like each individual outlet is choosing their own side and just basically sticking with that and not really trying to bridge the divide.
Mm. Yeah. Isn't there a kind of big... I mean, I'm sure, you know, there are a lot of things that a lot of media organisations do that aren't particularly palatable. But one that I find particularly troubling, and please understand, I'm absolutely in no way... I've got a lot of colleagues who work at Vice, and I think, you know, Vice does some great stuff. One of the things it doesn't do so well, like many organisations, is they do a lot of branded content. And one of their clients currently is Saudi Arabia, who there was a very well-known presenter, who I'm not going to talk about now, who came to me and said, look, I mean, I've been asked to go to Riyadh and make some of this content. And I was quite stunned. But actually, I shouldn't be, because actually all these media organizations have brands that basically are there to enable commercial parts of their organization. So The Guardian does events, The Financial Times has the Financial Times business, Vice has, you know, Vice Media, and they white label a lot of stuff. And the thing is that really... news you know, you're talking about like bridging the divide. There's a lot of money now in just outrage. Like, just
totally all these brands have co-opted identity politics, haven't they? Like, there's been so much of that. Like, okay, fine, great that Nike is supporting Colin Kaepernick, but maybe deal with your situation in your sweatshops in China before you jump on that bandwagon.
Well, I mean, it's just it's hypocrisy left, right, and centre, and it just poisons the debate. But I want to just to wrap up now.
And it goes all the way to the top.
What would you say is just quick thoughts from everybody? What would you say is the one thing that people need to understand about mental health that just hasn't been said in the media so far?
That it's not confined to a quarter of the population. We all have mental health, just like we have physical health, and it will inevitably fluctuate throughout your life. And just because you might be struggling with your mental health, it doesn't mean you have a mental illness. But in terms of the internet, you know, tying up what everyone said, the easiest emotions to evoke in people are fear and outrage. Mm. So when you've got something competing for your attention, you know, potentially that's pushing you towards anxiety and stress.
Awesome. Gavin, what do you think needs to change in terms of making sure that you have a better environment for the conversation online?
I think people have to inoculate themselves and realize that the world is statistics, and you know, those people who are out there kind of trolling you, as the term goes, are just sort of they're an anomaly. They are the 0.5%, and that's the thing the internet doesn't give you.
Agreed. Jolyon, Hayden, you guys are going to be doing Ministry of Justice tonight at 11 p.m. On Channel 4. I'm looking forward to that, especially the designated mugging zones, which should be fun. But you guys have been listening to The Floor Is Yours. I'll catch you next week. See ya.
Darling, you got to let me know, should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you got to let me know, should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day is fine, the next is black. So if you want me off your back, well come on and let me know, should I stay or should I go?
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.